to Quiver, the Green Arrow podcast. This is our 8th episode for Vendetta. Very exciting. I'm one of your co-hosts, Amanda Konkin.
I am your other host, Michael Cohen.
And thanks for joining us again. So the second to last episode before 2013. Very exciting. We apologize for being a bit tardy this week, but we're here to talk to you about lots of great things. So I appreciate you bearing with us. And yeah.
Cool. Well, it's been an eventful week. Like I think that a lot happened in this episode. I really enjoyed it. You didn't enjoy it as much.
No, I was underwhelmed by this episode, and it could be like a viewing thing. I feel like in the theater, that's like my background. The idea that like how you go into something viewing it really affects how you react to it. And I was very tired when I watched this episode and was sort of falling asleep. So I didn't really get to pay attention to it. And that's the first time that's ever happened. Usually I go into Arrow being like, I just want to watch this. I'm so excited. But last night I was like, no, I have to watch this because I got to record in the morning and we don't have time to record and watch at the same time. And
you see, I went to sleep at a regular time, a logical time. And then I just woke up and watched it in the morning.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I thought that it was one of the better episodes of the series so far.
Wow.
I think it had a lot, going on. Like like we said last week, there was no real B story. Like, yes, there was the stuff going on with Laurel and Tommy, but it feels like that's part of the greater story at this point. It doesn't feel like that's removed from the story, whereas previously B stories have felt very removed. And Thea did nothing this week, which was nice for
her. She said, Walter, give me a ride.
Yeah.
Actually, I will say Walter was technically the B storyline. But because it's related to things that we actually want to know about, it didn't seem like a B storyline. I totally...
Yeah, it's not really. That's the thing, is that it no longer feels like there's an A story and a B story.
Yeah,
it just feels like there's all these threads that we have to follow at the same time. So they're getting much better at it.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's a good thing. But we have an email.
Yeah.
Want to read that?
I do want to read it because it sounds like I could have written this email, which is exciting. So it's from Ramona Lee, or she signs off as Mona, so I'll just call her Mona. And it's entitled, What an Amazing Episode! So, hey guys, first time emailer and long time listener, you guys have my favorite TV show podcast. So just a couple questions. One, do you guys think that everyone in the Cult of Squiggly Lines have a book with a list of names? Two, will Helena eventually become redeemable? Because right now to me, she's heading down a dark path and I don't know what it will take to get her through. Unless her dead boyfriend fiance will rise from the dead. I'm actually kind of liking the Laurel-Tommy relationship for now. As long as it's not endgame, I'm good to go. He is really starting to grow on me, especially now that he has to actually get a job. I'm happy he'll have to detach himself from his father. I'm still loving Walter, especially the fact that he's not a stupid husband. I'm curious about how he'll continue to handle the book next week and if he'll let Moira know. The previews for the next episode look intriguing. I'm thinking the Dark Archer. But after finding out that the character is only from Smallville, I'm hoping they'll still bring him over. I can't wait for the next episode. Bye for now.
Okay, so let's clear some stuff up with regards to the Dark Archer / Merlin Sr.
Yes.
They are the same character. Okay, and that's not to say that Yao Fei, who we've been calling the Dark Archer, and Merlin are the same character. Like, the character of the Dark Archer from Smallville and the character of Merlin from the comics are the same character.
Yeah, he's called Merlin the Archer, Merlin the Magician, Arthur King, Merlin the Magnificent are a couple, according to Wikipedia.
According to Wikipedia.
But he's pretty good. He's got, like, a black get-up on and the arrows and he's an expert marksman. And there was sort of that where he was, like, combat, hand-to-hand combat he's supposed to be really good at, which is what he was doing with Tommy. So really exciting. So he is, I guess maybe Dark Archer is not what he's called, but he is a marksman of some kind, and he's the...
Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what they end up calling him on this show.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, Oliver hasn't been called Green Arrow yet.
Yeah,
so they're taking a lot of lot of leeway and poetic license with the characters. And letting them kind of just do their own thing. So, I don't think that he'll ever be called Merlin the Magician or Merlin the Magnificent or whatever like those the million and one names that he's got. So I think that we probably will see this character referred to as the Dark Archer in the future. I think that's the only logical way for them to go without it sounding silly. Because that calling him anything else, other than just referring to him as Merlin, it is going to be... It's going to be a little bit off-putting. Because those names sound an awful lot like the Silver Age of comics. Like, they don't sound like what we've been hearing in Arrow, which is, I mean, he hasn't even been called Arrow.
He's just been called
the Vigilante in the Hood.
Yeah.
So, and Helena didn't even get a nickname at any point in time. Like, there was
we were sad. That was the one that we wanted.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping that they'd allude to the fact that she's the Huntress. But,
She wore a purple costume.
Yeah, she did have purple in her costume. I wouldn't say she wore a purple costume. True. But there was a little bit of purple.
But so exciting about next week. Obviously, we'll talk about it at the end of the episode because we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah. But we just wanted to address that because it's something that we've sort of been talking about a little bit.
Yeah.
Other little things that I've just like found out. Again, we apologize for not having read that much of the Green Arrow comics / any. So, but there's different things like the idea that Merlin, whoever he is, the character, has sometimes been an ally with Deadshot, which is good. It's mentioned a lot. And also, there was he's had a small role in the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul. So this idea, remember we were talking about Ra's al Ghul last week, and like the idea that they could have a similar tone to them in terms of bad guys. So just interesting things that will keep us updated and see how we move forward. But that's good to know. So exciting stuff coming down the pipe for the next couple episodes.
Yeah.
This episode, going back to what Mona was saying about these two things, I'm so on you. The Cult of Squiggly Lines having a book, and will Helena become redeemable? Also, the Tommy Laurel relationship and Walter. Mm-hmm. All four of those things I'm going to talk about during this, because they're the things that I pointed out. Like, the Laurel-Tommy thing. Yay, Laurel and Tommy. They're so cute.
I like how you're championing an ultimately doomed relationship.
No,
like,
you know what?
It is. It's doomed. Like, it's at some point, we're talking about a show on the CW, and this episode, I found myself going like, okay, now this is a CW show couple of times.
It was, actually, that's, in all fairness, that's exactly true.
So, this one finally managed to get to that CW status of opening with, essentially, I mean, we're going to get into it right now, but essentially opening with a sex scene, and then having a lot of relationship stuff.
Yes, a lot of relationships.
So if you're gonna watch along with us, we're just watching through the previously on right now.
Yeah,
and the episode proper is about to start. So
and I don't know, you know, doomed relationships can be the funnest. I'm gonna say Lost.
The most fun.
Okay, the most fun. My favorite in Lost was Kate and
Jack.
No,
Sawyer.
Yeah, Kate and Sawyer. I love Kate. And they didn't end up together. I can like doomed relationships. That's fine. It might not be doomed. You never know. Maybe it'll be all like, ooh, we're going to switch it up. And
doomed. This episode pretty much said to us, anything that Oliver or Laurel do is doomed because they're going to end up together. Yeah. So we open up with Helena and Oliver in bed. And Helena's going to
He's so bruised. Sneak his away. Poor back.
I think that's a tattoo.
Is it? Why do you have a back tattoo?
Well, why not?
No, it's good. He's got
all kinds of tattoos.
He does. It's very exciting. They haven't talked about any of them, except for that one that was
awesome. This is an awesome location, and I think this is actually the set from Watchmen that
really?
They keep using in...
No way, that's
They
awesome.
Use it in Supernatural a lot.
Cool.
It's down, for those who live in Vancouver or in near the area... it's down on Marine by Market Crossing in Burnaby.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they use this set. I'm pretty sure this is the same set because I can't think of anywhere else that this would be in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So we've got... Helena's about to assassinate some triads, and we saw China White there.
Yeah.
And Oliver at the last second comes in and sort of...
It shoots the car. I didn't quite understand. Like, he was setting a car alarm off? I'm confused.
I wasn't sure, and I thought that maybe that would come back later, and it would be like a tracker or something
that. Yeah, but...
So that they could deal with it, but...
Yeah. Why does he have to take his hood off? He's like, I have to be emotional now, taking my hood off to talk to you.
Constantly taking his hood off and getting himself...
Silly.
Compromised. Like, what if somebody's on... The light is on in
that
window.
They'll just open the window
somebody's
and
just like, look and go like...
So, what's up?
Why is billionaire playboy Oliver Queen talking to that mob boss's daughter? And he's dressed like Green Arrow. What's going on? So they're having a... After last week, we kind of thought that maybe Oliver had swayed her over to his side. But she's still into the whole revenge, like, hardcore vigilante thing.
Yeah. And Diggle episode as well. Like, he sometimes comes and goes, but this... I mean, again, we're back at the diner, and she's talking, like, his sister-in-law is talking about him, making sure that he's still a part of this, I guess, and sort of recognized. So we do talk a lot about
Diggle. They go back here a lot. The Big Belly Burger. I think this is the first time we've actually gotten the name of the restaurant. And I feel like they could have done a little better. Like, that's all right.
Maybe it's from something that we don't know. Maybe Big Belly Burger is like a thing.
Maybe. If anybody out there knows, Brian, I'm talking to you. If you know what Big Belly Burger is and if it's a reference to anything.
Otherwise, we can make it up and we'll have some sort of convoluted black story as to what... Anyways, they're talking... Maybe this is why I didn't like it. It's very CWS. There's lots of, like, talking heads. Like, because I was watching it really late, I would close my eyes for parts of it and then open up and they wouldn't have moved. Like, there's a bunch of conversations that were just static conversations. So, but it's fine. They're sort of talking
But I feel in this episode in particular, I feel like Stephen Amell has really, like, he's honed in on the character.
Oh, yes. Can anybody guess my favorite part of this episode as well? It's going to come up soon.
When he's working out in front of Diggle.
How is he doing this? Yeah. Is he actually doing this? Because if he is, like, if you notice,
here,
look at this wide shot.
He's actually doing
freaking handstand push-ups. Like, what, Stephen Amell?
They're called muscles.
It's ridiculous.
And it's not that ridiculous. It's not like he's doing them freestanding. His feet are against the wall.
His feet are against the wall.
Well, I'm just saying, like, he's not having to balance that much.
But he has to act and do... Like, look at this, and then he just...
But
like,
here I was talking about his performance.
Sorry, oh yeah.
Okay, and you're talking about his muscles.
Sorry.
No, I really feel like there was only, like, one or two moments that felt maybe a little bit unnatural towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he really, like, I feel like he's really starting to find a home with the character.
Definitely.
And to understand it. And even when he gets a little bit emotional, it's not quite as melodramatic as it was previously.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more centered.
Yeah. No, it really is. And he's doing, like, this, I'm just, like, the reason I pointed out is because this is, like, a virtuosic performance. Like, he is doing really intense physical activity while acting with Diggle, right? Like, he's, like, he's just standing on top of a, like, this is insane. Anyways, good job, Stephen Amell, for being awesome.
Yeah.
And,
you can see why they cast him, because he had the capacity to be physical as well as perform, which I feel like a lot of actors that play superheroes don't have that capacity.
No, yeah,
I don't
true,
think
yeah.
that Christian Bale has that capacity as Batman. He at no point was he ever acting and being physical.
Right.
It's one or the other, and because he's got the cowl, you know that there's a stuntman in there
all the time.
Yeah. The only person that I can really equate it to in film is Chris Evans. Chris Evans manages to embody Captain America and give a great performance, both physically and emotionally. Like, it's a really grounded performance while being perfectly physical and having all of the superheroic characteristics, right? Yeah. So now we get a little bit of
Moira and Walter.
Yeah, Moira is only seen in the episode.
Anthea is only seen. Because Walter is not a throwaway character. Look at us being wrong.
No.
Love it. It's great. He's doing a great job in this episode. I really liked it. And the idea that he forgives her and sort of is kind of like, whatever, you lied to me. And this is the thing is that, like, I don't understand how he didn't ask, like, why any of this was happening. He just was kind of like, you lied to me. Just don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds the book and is kind of like, more lies. I was like, well, why didn't you inquire as to why she lied in the first place? And then she would have told you anyways. But I like him. I think
he understands that she's not going to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
That if he pries, that it's going to just make things worse.
Yeah, okay.
That he has to kind of let her reveal things, right?
Yeah.
But
and again, no pants on Thea this episode.
No pants. She's got her schoolgirl outfit, which is a little bit disconcerting. But, because, yeah, CW audience. We know why they're watching shows like this. And she is not actually a teenager in real life.
Yeah, fair enough.
So.
Man, the houses are just fantastic.
I would go for obscene or obnoxious.
Yeah.
But,
well.
I think this looks like it's a location. I'm pretty sure that Oliver's mansion, like the Queen Mansion, is a set.
Yeah, but this, I'm sure, is a house in, like, West Point Grey or something.
Yeah, probably.
They have great stuff. I was doing extra work rents in a house, and they made the house like the lobby of a really fancy hotel. Like, it was just that big that the house, it was ridiculous.
Surprisingly, those aren't even the expensive houses in Vancouver. You can get a bungalow in Vancouver that's $3 million. So imagine how much this house costs.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in case you didn't know, we're at the Bertinelli house, and Oliver is here to talk to Helena.
Yeah, that's basically what happens.
Pretty much it.
Yeah, okay. This is what bothers me about this episode. I'm really sorry cut you off, but it's because Helena, I'm not invested in her at all.
Okay.
Like, this idea that she, like, the conversation that just happened with that woman and him is to be like, look, you destroyed this woman's life. Don't you care at all?
Yeah.
And the idea that she doesn't care. But, like, I wasn't getting anything from her this episode.
But that's the thing, is that she doesn't care.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why this scene is in there is to show the difference between her and Oliver. Yeah. Right off the bat, like, right at the beginning of the episode. Oliver cares about the people that he affects, and we've seen that in past episodes, right?
Yeah.
But for Helena, it's not about justice, it's not about righting wrongs, it's not about saving the city, it's about her own personal vendetta, right? So for her, like, and now Oliver's taking her to Sarah Lance's grave to tell her the story of how he feels responsible, and this is what happens when people get caught in the crosshairs of all of this stuff that's going on in Starling City. And she's kind of emoting, but I feel like he connects with her for a minute, but not on a deep level.
Yeah.
Not in the same way, because what he's doing, he's trying to do for her what Diggle has done for him.
Right?
Like, he's turning around and trying to emulate that behavior in order to save her, like Diggle has saved him, essentially, right? But first of all, he's not fully saved yet. So he's not in a position to be saving anybody else. And she doesn't care, right? Like, I think she right now in this moment cares about him, and that's where the emotion's coming from.
This most awkward hand-holding ever.
Yes, but she doesn't actually understand what he's saying.
Right.
Because she doesn't care about the people that she's affecting.
Right?
She just sees what was done to her.
Yeah.
And I think part of it, she's sort of justified in it because she was almost targeted.
Yeah.
Whereas Oliver wasn't. Oliver was a bistander in the situation, right?
That's true.
So for people to get hurt because of him,
it wasn't actually
directed at him,
right? So
it is a little bit different.
And this is what really bothered, like, this idea that they're like forcing this relationship. Like, sometimes in big things you'll have, like, I know that there's a couple times in Supernatural they've done it where they bring in like a character for one episode and have like a love thing between them and the main character, and then it becomes like a good, like, that episode standing alone is really like intense and passionate, and you're kind of like, oh, that was so great. And this, I think it's just like the relationship, I guess it is, it's just like really difficult, and like this really contrived, like, let's show you how to shoot an arrow type thing.
I don't know if it's that contrived. I mean, it's an awesome metaphor for what Oliver is now, and it shows just how much Yao Fei has imparted on him,
They
the point is, when you have a gun, it's reactionary, right? You're just firing bullets. There's no personality to it.
Yeah.
Whereas with an arrow, like he says, it's about control, right? So it's a part of you, right? It's a very conscious decision to make that shot.
Yeah.
Even though he does it really quickly, he knows what he's doing, which is evidence. I mean, she sort of goofs off for a second, and And she's she throws the coffee cup up, and he hits it.
This is such a fun scene.
It's so great. It's so great. And she throws the oil can up, and he hits that one. And then she grabs the tennis ball, and consciously he knows when she picks it up what he's gonna do. He doesn't even give her the opportunity to throw it because his point is that every time he does it. Yeah. He knows what he's going to do before he does it. Yeah. He has to make a decision, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with a gun, it's very impersonal. It's very right. Just pull the trigger, get the job done, right? And we see that at the end with her, right? It is very impersonal, and she is true. Just it's like, just sort of... it's just about killing, right? And there's Diggle with his judgmental. Yeah. Diggleness, but he's right.
He looks so great just wearing that pack of arrows, with his regular shirt on. He's wearing yellow pants. No way.
No, they're not yellow. They're khaki.
They are sort of yellow.
They're khaki. They're brown cargo pants.
Fine.
Calm down. you're reaching.
I want someone to wear yellow pants.
But I don't. I liked this relationship because it shows yes, it is artificial, but it's supposed to be artificial, right? Yeah. It's. Oliver is reaching, right?
Yeah.
He's really stretching to try and find somebody to connect with.
It's so sad.
When, I think by the end of the episode, one of the things that he realizes is that he's got Diggle, right?
Yeah.
He's sort of resistant to it because Diggle's very judgmental and Diggle's very mentorly of you're making the wrong moves.
Yeah,
right?
And this quote was, I think, it sums up the theme of the episode. Diggle did it very well. You think by saving another addict, you can not be an addict yourself or something like that. I think that was a really sort of poignant. Yeah. Diggle just knows exactly what to say. He does.
He's always right.
Yeah,
That's one of the places where, if he was a character that was just constantly finding fault with everything Oliver did, I don't think that we'd like him very much.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's always right
is
us looking in going Oliver, you're stupid, why are you making this mistake?
Yeah.
And it's their way of acknowledging on the show
that's
what's happening. I just want to point out, when she was getting her coffee, the coffee mate was turned, the logo was turned away from the screen. It was the back of the package
because
they couldn't get clearance for the coffee mate logo. But it was very clearly coffee made.
If you notice, I'm noticing a lot. I know that the colors and the saturation we've sort of maybe talked a little bit about, but everything is very orange when it's not Oliver. Are you noticing that? The house was very orange with Walter and Moira, and this space is very orange.
They have sort of two colors that they go with.
And then they've got the
it's blue. Very yellow or it's very blue.
Yeah.
And then Oliver is green.
Yeah.
So, which is interesting because yellow and blue together makes green.
Because we're here in Walter's office and it's blue. I just think maybe it's a tone
The lighting is blue in the background, but if you look, the lamp is orange.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Their color, the clothing that they're wearing is very dark gray blue.
Yeah.
But the actual, the color timing on this scene is very yellow.
So they're
really clear on visually how they want the show to look.
Right, yeah.
Just like Supernatural, which I think Supernatural, I think I've said it before, is the best shot show on television.
Okay.
From a visual standpoint, it's flawless. Yeah. I don't think that there's another show.
Cult of the Squiggly Lines.
Yes, Cult of the Squiggly Lines.
Sorry, we're missing out on Felicity Smoke.
Yeah, Felicity has uncovered more about this about the warehouse and all that sort of thing.
And look what she's wearing. I love this. She's very toned down.
Yeah.
She's very I love this character now. I was really worried about her.
They reined her.
But I'm anyways, sorry.
So she went ahead and kept investigating, and Walter just kind of dressed her down for it and said, I don't think because he's mad at her for prying into it.
No.
I think because he's trying to get her off of it because he got the security guy killed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that there's a responsibility there that he feels that he sort of discourages her from looking into it further.
And then here we go. She's like, let's go after this Anthony Venza guy. So, and he's going to teach her how to be Huntress, basically.
Yeah.
But without saying it, because that's sad. I'm just wondering, they're going to go after him tonight, but yet they're going to order her costume off the internet? I was a little confused by this. as to...
I don't think that they were ordering it off the internet. I think that he had, like, a...
mock-up of
yeah,
it?
Like, okay. A thing on his screen. Okay.
You got a spare hood. I like it. It's very exciting.
And it's not night. It's daytime, because you can see the daylight.
Oh, see, there's daylight outside.
So,
no, that's not daylight. It's raining outside. If you'll notice the big thing of rain behind, like, on the one side of the... No? I don't know.
Doesn't look like it's raining to me.
Fine. Anyways, so that here we are at the warehouse with the drugs, those extras, and their gas masks, or what are they called?
Surgical masks. Because they're working with
very
drugs.
Exciting.
I like that this really wasn't important. It was he had his one little like sort of soliloquy about
what the drugs
Oxycontins.
Were. Like
just to get like all it did was tell us this dude is a scumbag, right? Like,
yeah.
That's all we needed to know was how bad this guy is. Well, he's this bad, where he has a soliloquy about Oxycontins versus crack, right? So I thought that was really great. Like, as far as the writing goes, this is, in my opinion, one of the stronger episodes.
Yeah. She looks cool here. You have failed the city. Like, this is cool. Mind you, they used it in the trailers, so obviously we all knew it was coming. But...
You know, I'm not a fan of her costume design. Okay. I'm not a huge fan of it. I do like how they worked the cross in, because that is part of her costume
in
the comics.
Nice. Oh, I didn't know.
So the fact that they worked it into her story with her fiancé.
Yeah.
And,
it's cool.
It's there. It's not prominent, but it's sort
it's
of the solution
of it.
To it. But I don't like the tails trench coat thing that they had going on there. It didn't feel... I don't know. It just didn't work for me. The superhero costumes for me on this, the hero ones in particular, I'll say, they feel a little bit lackluster in my opinion. Heroes need to be a little bit more out there. The villains have been out there. I mean, the Royal Flush Gang had their masks. Like, there was no explanation, really, other than the fact that the father plays cards.
Right, yeah.
Right?
So
and obviously, Deathstroke is very out there, and Deadshot is very out there. So I don't know why they're
because the costumes distance you from the actual people, whereas because the villains can be a bit more caricature, whereas these people, they have to be like, no, look, they're still human beings, because we aren't in the world of magic, right? Like, we're in the world of real people, from a character standpoint. I sort of understand them wanting to tone down.
It just feels they've gone just a step too far, in my opinion, into making them just plain looking. They don't look very heroic.
They just look
sort of like, they don't look military, they don't look heroic, they
sort of
look somewhere in between. And it's kind of just it's just muddied, in my opinion. But I guess the characters are also kind of muddied. So
look at this outfit.
Very
these shoes are insane, and this dress is insane. Like, it's so tight. and long I love dresses with long sleeves, and then it's just very exciting. I think that they dressed her well in the scene. That's all I'm going to say. And then, again, more talking heads with her and her dad. Which is very weird. I don't know what I think about the dad.
He's an interesting character.
Yeah.
They didn't really get to develop him a lot, and I think that was a shame, because if we would have had maybe a little bit more time to develop him, given him maybe an episode before she came in. It could have been nice to get more of an understanding of exactly who he is.
Although I will say, this was a great, because it bothered me, the phone, how he didn't even say excuse me or I'm gonna answer this phone. He just basically ignored her and answered the phone. Which I guess maybe is indicative of their relationship. And then I don't know. Second scene.
Yeah, I guess she didn't
have
just the one scene.
But it's, again, she's saying a few things and then leaving.
Yeah.
So, it's good. She was very secondary. Which is cool, because what I'm curious as is, what's going on with the Cult of Squiggly Lines during this? Because I'm curious, she's probably going to meet Merlin, right? This thing, this episode, they're, not showing us certain things that are actually happening, which is cool. Especially if we're right in assuming that next week stuff's going to go down with Merlin, right?
Yeah.
Which would be a really cool thing, right? Television shows rarely do that. They rarely, to the audience, be like, we're not going to show you something.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool if they do that.
Well, I think that we're supposed to, in this scene, not necessarily trust her. in order to feel the same way that Walter does. So the fact that we don't see where she goes allows us to go, maybe she's not telling the truth, right? Yeah. And that allows us to relate to Walter. Like I said, the writing in this episode is... It's pretty much perfect. Like, you can say whatever you want about performance and maybe about some of the execution, but the writing itself is really, really solid in this episode. The setting up feelings and emotions for us to relate to with the characters is all right there. And it doesn't take a lot to find it under the surface.
Yeah.
It's not hidden. And I find if it's hidden, then you can miss it. And if you miss it, then the writers haven't done their jobs, right? Whereas it's not surface, it's just below the surface, which allows us to access it really easily. Yeah. So Walter has been snooping around and he finds a book blank pages.
So
all of his fathers, right?
And this is the first time that we've seen that other people have the same book, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That, again, I guess maybe I missed this. Oh, and then you have Tommy and Laurel at the restaurant.
Yes.
And he wants to go for a fancy restaurant for some reason, even though he can't really pay for it. He can pay to go to this fancy restaurant, but he can't pay to tip her. Like, that's
He can't pay what it would cost in order to get them a table right now.
Yeah.
Which I would assume is a lot of money. Yeah, like, you can't slip somebody a 20 and expect to get a table.
And then I was waiting for this last episode, so I'm glad I did it this episode. A double date between the two of them. Like, I was waiting for it, right? Like, that's the obvious place you go when he
gets like gone. Like I said, it goes very CW.
It does. It's exciting. And the great part is, like, that, like, and then the reveal of her being, like, the girlfriend. It's just very, I really liked this episode. And I liked this how, like, Tommy was like, what is going on? Why are we... And it was the girls that wanted to have the table together, and the guys know better because...
The one thing I didn't like is that she insists on it, and then later on gets mad at him.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's like, well...
So unfair.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's a very female prerogative sort of thing to do where...
Is it? Okay, yes, it is. Okay. But yes, this is exciting for Tommy. She's just like, there are no good ways to die. And Tommy's like,
she kind of just she doesn't quite know how to socialize with regular people.
No, that's good. But they've known each other forever and you get like this idea of like the history and that they all grew up together, which is cool.
It's odd. Cause I think that we've mentioned it before. Like, how would Laurel have gone to the same school as these guys? Cause they would have gone to a prep school.
This is my thing is like, maybe she was really smart and maybe she did go to a prep school, right? We don't know about her mom. But, we don't know about like,
but if that's the case, then why wouldn't Helena, if she's from Starling City, also have gone to a prep school?
Like, fair enough.
Maybe there's multiple prep schools in the city, but
I would
think, like, if they're as rich as that front of their house suggests they are, that they would have gone to the same school, but...
Yeah, this is weird.
Maybe they're not the same.
You know what? I'm totally with you. How would she have known all them? Because her dad is a detective in the city. He's not a rich guy. How does she know?
It's a little weird, but, you know. We can let
anyways, but it's very, very exciting that like the things get revealed here about like now you're dating his best friend, and it's really like pointing out to Laurel, I think, how weird it sort of is. And again, the Tommy wanting a job from Tommy's very human in this episode. I really like how sort of his
they
folly
got they got rid like, of all of the obnoxious stuff.
They did.
And it's just like Felicity, right?
Yeah,
like
they stripped away
all of that extraneous, like, let's make them characters are just allowing them to be regular people, right? Which makes them much more interesting. It makes because of the fact that they're not superheroes or supervillains, it makes it a little bit easier to take them, right?
Oh, and this is so great. He's like, it's Oliver and Laurel. That's not going to change. Look at how vulnerable he is. poor Tommy.
See, I think that you just like him, so you just want him to be happy. You really don't care about
like him
and Laurel.
No,
together.
I just want him to not be evil. Like, they're setting him up to be evil, and I really don't want him to be evil, right? Because what's going to suck so bad is that if then Laurel and Ollie get together, and then poor Tommy's like, why have you forsaken me, world?
And they pull a Harry Osborn, and he becomes the second Dark Archer.
I don't want that because I love Tommy. I think that he's doing a good job. So, anyways,
we'll see. We'll see where they go with it.
We'll see where they go with it. They've set up so many things to be really good.
Yeah, so here she is. She's upset about it. And yeah. It's like,
Did you hurt you, like, hurt me and all this stuff? But anyway, like...
But I think what we can take away from this is that she's not quite... I don't want to say that she's not all there, because it's not like she's crazy.
Yeah.
But emotionally, she's not together. Oh, she does not have it together.
She... It said scoffs. I when she took Detective's lens to scoff this week so that we can honor him and his memory and his lack of this episode.
But yeah, like her emotional state is all over the place. And that goes back to the bow and arrow thing of control, right?
No, and that's
like she doesn't have the control that Oliver does. Yeah. And he's trying to impose that on her. He had 5 years on an island to get there, and he's expecting her to get there overnight, which is a little unfair. But
and it's saying, like, again, what Mona said in her email, the idea that she's heading down a dark path and we don't know what it's going to take to get her through it. But she leaves, at the end, you know, spoiler, she leaves the city, right? So you're kind of like, maybe there's something she has to go through to become Huntress and all this stuff.
Does
she
say where she's heading?
No, I don't think so.
She's heading to Gotham.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Or at least Bloodhaven.
Yeah. Oh, and then he comes to apologize. Oh, that's so cute. I love Laurel never wears pants in her own apartment. It's great. Never. She's always wearing, like, little boy shorts.
Her pajamas.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's a CW show.
I don't know. Yeah, fair enough.
As much as, like, you are entertained by the muscles and the push-ups, the guys are entertained by the shorts and underwear when there's underwear, or just nakedness when there's nakedness.
Fair enough. Oh, and see the orange again. It's good. I like the colors. Anyways, yeah, so, and poor Tommy being like, I have nothing to bring to this, and she said billionaire was your least attractive quality. It's good. It's, like, cute. I think there's a genuineness. I like her a lot more now, too. Mm-hmm. I didn't like her with Ollie, but I'd be curious to see if they, like, flashbacked to, again, no flashbacks this episode, so we've gone away from that, but if they, like, at one point in time, flashback to, like, her and Ollie, like, previous to... his island.
Before the island.
Yeah, because they never really talk about, like, why they were together to begin with, right? Like,
I think we'll get that at some point. I think, again, we're dealing with season 5 characters, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's true.
Where she was before Oliver left is not where she's at now.
Yeah.
She had to deal with her boyfriend dying and finding out that her boyfriend was sleeping with her sister and her sister dying.
Yeah.
And keeping her trying to keep her family together, because it sounds like
that's why the mom,
whatever happened with their mom, it happened because of Sarah dying, right?
Yeah.
So she probably grew up a lot in those 5 years, which is why she was so disappointed when Oliver came back and was irresponsible, acting that way at least, right?
Yeah.
So like nothing had changed.
Yeah.
I think if anything, we can understand where she's upset, because she would expect him to have changed a lot, and he hasn't changed. And I think that's a lot of what they were talking about in early episodes.
Yeah. And then we have Diggle and Ollie talking here in... again, Diggle really... being there as, like, this sort of figure that just comes in and is, like, telling you what you don't want to say to yourself, but that you just need someone. He just needs someone there to talk to him about it, right? Like, this is great. He just really, like, you can tell... look at this emotion. You're totally right. Look at Stephen Amell just, like, kicking it.
Yeah, he's excellent in this episode. I think he really managed to carry it, even when some of the other performances might not have been quite there.
Yeah.
He managed to make it believable with his performance, I'm not gonna go easy on him. In the first few episodes, it wasn't there yet, right?
No,
he didn't quite have a handle on the character yet, and the emotion came off as melodramatic, right? But we've been following him on Facebook, and you can tell as an actor that as he's gone along, he's gotten more comfortable with the character, and he feels like he's getting better as he goes. So just to recognize that he is, it's a really noticeable difference.
I love that this is crazy. Over top of the subtitles, our subtitles are saying speaking Chinese.
Speaking Chinese, yeah.
And Chinese is not a language, just want to point it out.
Not a spoken language.
Spoken language, exactly. So you can't speak Chinese.
No, you can't speak Chinese. You can speak Mandarin or Cantonese.
Anyway, just to putting it out there. That's the one thing that really bothered me about this. She's like, I don't speak Chinese. Can't speak Chinese. So,
China White should have, like, come in and, like, said that. Like, no one speaks Chinese, and, like, punched her or something. But, yeah, she just executed a bunch of triads, except for one, and said...
Tell them.
Frank Bertinelli says hello or whatever, right? Yeah. She's now sparking off a gang war.
Yeah. And as much as they've reined Felicity in, she still had that one-liner where she was like, so it's...
She's still quirky.
She's still quirky. Yeah. It's good, yeah.
They haven't erased that from her character.
Yeah.
They just, like I said, they've reined it in, right? They've just brought it back to a more reasonable level of, like, not quite Chloe levels. Every line has to be a one-liner.
Yeah. Which is good because you get this, I think she gets it in this scene as well. Yeah. She gets why he was being weird previously.
Well, he explains it.
Right?
Yeah. He says it.
Well, I know. Okay, fine. Fair enough. Yes, it's true. Right? She's great. And like, she's just totally, like, excited. Yeah. Look how excited.
She's not scared, though. Like, that's the thing. And that's... Yeah. She's going to be around for a while. She's going to be a regular character. And, and it's cool that they managed to make us wonder about it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Where it was like, is this a one-off character?
Yeah.
And then as she's come back, like, they're building her up into a regular cast member.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yes.
That shows... an evolution of the show that you don't usually see until later seasons, right? Like, they've come into this series and in 8 episodes managed to give it a very grounded center, which usually takes 1 or 2 seasons to get to. Like, the first season is usually pretty rocky. And I'll say the first couple episodes had that element to it. The pilot was one thing, and then the second episode was a completely other thing, and then the third episode kind of brought it back, and then the fourth episode went off base.
But now
at this point, 8 episodes in, with the last 3 episodes, it seems like they're in a really solid place. They know what they're doing. From a visual standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, from performances, it's all really, really solid. And it just makes me really excited for the episodes after the first 13, right?
Yeah.
We get through the first 13, which is sort of them figuring stuff out, and we get into sort of the back 9 of the season.
It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how much they can amp it up and really hone what they've done so far.
Oh, I loved it, by the way. I had to point out the previous scene where, like, he calls someone and then goes, it's Dig. What's the situation? It's like, obviously it's Diggle. Who else would the Green Arrow be calling? I just wanted to, I don't know.
Fair enough.
Anyways, then we have Bertinelli, Bertinelli. What is that? And, oh, China White just totally...
is speaking Chinese, apparently, according to the subtitles.
Saying. Yeah.
The closed captions that covered the subtitle.
That said, leave no one alive. So this idea that they're just going through and it's war because the triad was attacked, so here it's...
And Frank doesn't have a lot of guys left.
Yeah.
Because Helena's been taking them down.
But then you have Arrow at the top of the stairs. Like, what a
that's
cool
a beautiful
scene.
Shot.
Like
that,
look at that. That's just brilliant.
That's an iconic moment. And I think that might be the first iconic moment in the series of him just sort of like standing with that awesome backlight.
Oh, that was great.
Or like, we don't need to see him. We don't need to. We know the hood and the arrow.
Yeah.
We know who it is.
Yeah, and
right?
They didn't have to do a close up. It was great. Yeah, for sure.
So it really,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of sets up for next week.
Yeah,
right?
because
if that's all people ever see of him, if then, he's working in the shadows, then it's really easy for somebody to come in and fake it. And she got shot in the leg.
Yes.
Not dead.
Yes. That's true.
So
very
interesting that was a little bit more obvious than some of the other characters who I think are going to come back.
Yeah. But I think China White's... although it said in the list of characters, like IMDb, it only has her in for 3 episodes. But maybe she'll come back a little bit later. And maybe it's just that she's not...
Whether she comes back this season or not, she has the capacity to come back.
I bet you they shot She's the Man here as well, because I'm like, this scene looks really familiar. Why? And it's because there's like a scene where she's like, by the poor... Oh, Vancouver... there's only so many places to shoot in this city. But this is good. So she's the huntress without her mask on. Like, what is the big deal? Keep your mask on. He knows it's you anyways. But
yeah, he's
going
to figure
it
out.
I don't know. I guess whatever. The actors need to have emotion with their eyes.
I thought this was an interesting twist, though, to have her come after her father.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, she went to the triads and sparked the whole thing so that, I think, so that she could get him alone like this and get her vengeance, right?
Yeah.
But so, but Oliver shows up in the nick of time to stop her from doing something that she would regret.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because this character of Huntress is traditionally a Batman character.
Right. Okay.
And and the role that Oliver is playing right now is traditionally played by Batman. Because Batman has his whole vengeance on the city thing.
This is the whole thing that, didn't we say that Green Arrow is just,
he is Batman.
Like, it's because they can't put Batman on television right now, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good. Oh, and then he
shoots his own daughter. Yeah. Like, and tries to kill her, right?
Yeah. Like, you can see it in his eyes. You get this dynamic then, like, that's where I think she was justified in going to kill him, right? Like, this idea that she like learned that from him, right? This idea that
where she could justify it to herself.
Yeah, to herself. Say. Sorry, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Because if he would kill her, then why wouldn't she? Like, if she's became hardened by like nobody loving her.
Well, it makes it makes the motivation of the character make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is the environment that she's grown up in, with a man who would kill his own daughter.
Yeah,
because like. He doesn't kill her because she's going to kill him. He kills her, or tries to kill her, because she betrayed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's because of that mobster, like, you're against the family, you're not part of the family sort of thing, right? Which, when you understand that, you can see why she's so messed up.
Yeah. It's just like hints of purple.
Yeah, it's very subtle, right? Like, it's sort of that the underarm part and then the inside of the jacket on the tails.
These costumes are cool. This is like a really, like, it's very light. This is the first time that's very light, and they're just sort of
you can
there
see them.
Costumes. Yeah.
That's one of my things is that I feel like seeing it like this, seeing Oliver's costume like this, I like it a little bit more when we can actually see it.
Yeah.
Because most of the time he's running around in a shadow and it just doesn't look like much of anything.
Yeah.
I think, but that's my thing. That's where having those heroic costumes makes it a little bit more a little bit more fun.
Right.
And Batman has a very good excuse for having color on his costume. And it's, I can't remember what story it's in. It's probably in multiple ones. I think it might actually be in one of the Kevin Smith ones, where the logo on his chest is yellow for a reason.
Huh.
It's a target, right?
Yeah,
like it,
yeah.
Because that way he knows exactly where to put all of the Kevlar
armor.
Right? Because bad guys are going to shoot for that because they can't see anything else, right?
Yeah.
They can just see this bright yellow bat signal.
Yeah.
So that's where they'll shoot for. And Superman's kind of the same thing. In the recent Smallville comic, in the season 11 Smallville comic, which is excellent. If you're not reading it, you need to be reading it.
I'm shutting my ears.
Well, it's not really a spoiler. It's just his, underneath his shield, it's lead lined and bulletproof underneath the S shield because it's a target. If anybody's going to shoot him, that's where they're going to shoot him.
Yeah.
And even Superman's got to worry about kryptonite bullets, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Very cool. But now we get the wrap up bye bye
at the Big Belly Burger.
Yeah, Big Belly Burger. Where
I like these.
We can sort of take the whole episode, everything that's happened, and Diggle will wrap it in a nice tidy bow. Tidy bow. And
I don't think love is about changing a person. I think it's about finding the person who's already the right fit.
And then we get this weird shot of
his sister-in-law.
Very, very odd and interesting. And, I mean, obvious. I think that we all knew that this was the direction that they were going to go
with it. Yeah.
But an interesting and odd choice nonetheless. Yeah. Even if it is expected.
Yeah. This is kind of an interesting scene. It's kind of like, Ollie's like, I kind of failed. And Diggle's like, no, you didn't. You're good.
This is why he's a good mentor. And he's a good, they're writing him perfectly because when he falls he's Alfred, right? When he's there to tell Bruce or Batman you're screwing up, you're doing something stupid, but when he falls he's there to pick him back up and dust him off and say, look, just because you lost this fight doesn't mean you've lost the war. Yeah. Get back out there, right? Yeah. Like, he's a good coach.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, he'll tell you when you've screwed up, but he'll be there for you when you do screw up, right? Even if you don't, don't listen.
Yeah. I love it. Wouldn't have sounded so dirty. She's just so cute.
Yes. Yes. That was much... figured it out. Figured it out. And then they have these awesome infrared UV glasses or whatever.
And he looks cool wearing
Can you not see Oliver wearing a pair of those later? From R&D?
That would be great.
And her outfitting him?
Yes.
At some point?
Oh, man! That...
Prediction now. Awesome. When Walter does die, I don't think it's going to happen very soon, but when it does happen, because it will, because there has to be consequences to him digging into this stuff.
Felicity will.
When he dies, Oliver is going to take her under his wing.
Yeah.
And she's going to become his Lucius Fox and start, pulling stuff from R&D and giving him all of this awesome equipment and stuff. Another prediction, because now we're at the final scene with Tommy coming to...
Apologizing
and asking for a job. And Oliver saying, of course.
Fund is your trust fund. So cute.
It's not really the point. But he asks him for a job and he says, yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah.
And my prediction is that this is how Merlin's going to find out about Oliver being...
Because he's not...
Green Arrow. Yeah, because he's... Because if they're both working on the club, at some point he's going to find the Arrow Cave underneath, right?
Yeah.
So...
And he's going to wonder, what Ollie's doing, or he'll, know, and he'll be able to correlate the two things together.
Yeah.
I would love Tommy to be an ally. I really want Tommy to be an ally.
So would I. I would really like for him... I really want them to create a character.
Yeah.
I really want them to make their own superhero. I feel like that's the one place... where these series, they always fall short, is that they're really great at bringing in characters that we know and love, and they're great at paying tribute to things, and homage, and all of that stuff. Smallville was awesome at it, but I don't feel like Smallville did a great job of ever creating anything new, and letting that stand on its own, and possibly have a life of its own, with the exception of Chloe.
Yeah,
Chloe
yeah.
is one character that was created specifically for Smallville that managed to stand the test of time on that. But
well, I feel like
I'd really Diggle love
is like a new thing.
Diggle is kind of a new thing, but he's not really a new. He's just Alfred, right? They're just using him to fulfill a purpose.
Yeah.
But I would love to see them build up a new superhero for this series that is a supporting character and to show that you know, because Oliver in the comics he's not a lone wolf, he's far from it, he has a lot of allies, most notably Green Lantern. Like the two of them are friends, friends and they hang out when they're not being superheroes as well as when they are superheroes, so to have him, and he's not in that place yet as a character, and I'm not saying that I want them to do this stuff in season one, but I would like you're saying, building up Tommy as an ally, maybe having him, I mean, they've put him in a position where he's fighting against his father, it's not on the same level that Oliver is going to be in the next episode, I think, but it is there. And whether or not they continue down that road, or if they pull a switch on us and you know, when Merlin dies at the end of the season, speculation, people. I don't know that.
Yeah.
But when they deal with that character and whatever, when they deal with him, and he goes away, they could very easily Harry Osborn that situation where they see that all in the same episode. Like, I can see the season finale. The 2-hour season finale where Tommy discovers that he's the Green Arrow. Laurel discovers that he's the Green Arrow. And then Merlin and Arrow have this huge throwdown. Diggle almost dies.
Laurel then gets her memory. She gets amnesia. She gets hit in the head.
And Merlin and Arrow have a fight to the death, or at least seemingly fight to the death. And as far as we know, Merlin dies, and Tommy sees it, and knows, and puts it all together, and then goes, I'm getting... And inherits all of the money from his father, and the resources to become Dark Archer, right?
Come on, do something new! That is the first Spider-Man movie!
That is literally the end of the first Spider-Man movie. So, I'd really love it if they throw us a curveball like they have with Diggle, like they have with Walter.
Yeah.
And they don't do that stuff. Yeah. I would really love it if Laurel decides to become Black Canary of her own accord and having nothing to do with Oliver specifically.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
It can have to do with Arrow and with the Vigilante and with what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I would love it to be an answer to that rather than an answer to Oliver being Green Arrow.
I feel that'd be feasible.
Much more interesting for them to tell that story and then for her to eventually find out that they're the
as
same.
As the Canary. That would be cool. Would be really cool.
Yeah. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
We are. And I love that we were getting mad at them for, like, don't do the Spider-Man thing, even though we're like, it's probably going to be a Spider-Man. We came up with that and had no idea that, or like you did, right? Like, this idea that, like, well, maybe we're getting mad at them for things that they aren't planning on doing.
We'll have to wait and see. But, like, next Wednesday, we're seeing that there's this other Archer running around in black, shooting lots of guys, killing lots of people. And we don't really get to see who it is in this preview.
No, we don't at all.
They make it seem like you can see who it is. They have this one shot with, like, the mirror, broken mirror thing.
Oh, and so you can sort of... Yeah,
but I think that that's actually a scene of them fighting and I'm excited for next week. I'm really excited for next week because I think for the first time we're gonna get supervillain versus superhero.
Oh yeah,
because we've gotten kind of supervillain versus superhero. We've gotten Deadshot, which was him kind of tracking down, we've gotten a couple of throwdowns between him and China White.
Yeah,
but this is gonna be like. Like, this is full on. Like, this is no holds barred supervillain versus superhero. And I'm excited about it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I am too.
It looks very cool.
That'd be good. That's all I have to say.
Just excited?
I think it's going to be awesome. Yeah. Well, especially if they make John Barrowman a badass, I would totally get on that. Because right now he's kind of like guy in suit that sits in car.
Yeah.
Like...
I want to see him take matters into his own hands. Like, we know him as Captain Jack Harkness.
Yeah,
and Captain Jack's not a guy to shy away from a fight, right?
So, exactly.
So yeah, I want to see John Barrowman get his hands dirty, and I think he's going to. I think we all know what's happening.
It's good.
They're gonna try and hide it, and it's gonna be a big reveal at the end of the episode.
Or they won't reveal at the end of this episode. Or maybe we'll we'll go away.
And maybe again, we're completely off. Base and
maybe
wrong.
It's Yalfay back to teach him something.
Maybe
it
could
be so many different things.
It could be a lot of things.
I thought we had next week Peg, and now I'm like, wait.
It could be Deadshot again.
Oh,
right? Like, it could be Deadshot back from the dead and trying to ruin Oliver's reputation to show him that he is a bad guy. Because that was his thing, right? Like, you're just like me. Like, I thought we were, like, professional courtesy, right?
Yeah.
You
mentioned Deadshot, and I just wanted, because someone pointed it out on the Facebook page, Deadshot had Andy Diggle written on his chest as one of the things, and someone speculated that maybe that's Diggle's brother, but you were saying that that's actually...
Andy Diggle is the writer that Diggle is named after.
Yeah.
That his namesake comes from.
But they have so many Easter eggs in these shows, though, like, for just for people that are really wanting to, like, know things, and it's really exciting. There's
Oliver's mugshot.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember.
1941 or something.
Yeah,
it says,
it's got the date of Green Arrow's first appearance.
Yeah, which is so cool.
Yeah, which is a really cool. Like, they're really, really attentive to things in this show, and I think that's one place where they've gone above and beyond where Smallville did in early seasons, because I think in early seasons of Smallville, they were much more concerned with distancing themselves than they were with drawing parallels or paying homage.
But Al and Miles weren't really integrated into the comic book universe, were they? Like, in terms of writers? Like, the creators of this show are, like, comic book writers, right? Like, they're so integrated.
Well,
into...
this show is a response to Smallville. So I think for Smallville, had to sort of set the stage for a... We trace it all the way back. It goes all the way back to Buffy. Buffy is the first show, right? Yeah. Buffy is the one that made it possible for all of these other shows to come on. So when we say, you know, like CW tropes, especially when we're talking about fantasy, sci-fi, relationship, drama shows, we're talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's the first show. And if anybody out there listening to this that enjoys Arrow has not watched Buffy, Angel, or Smallville... You have a couple of weeks where there's no episodes of Arrow following this next week. And get on it. Start watching that stuff.
All Buffy's because, on Netflix?
Yes. And it's worth getting into this stuff. Yeah. Because these are the shows that sort of laid the groundwork for a show like Arrow to come in and be so strong in a first season.
Yeah.
But like I was saying about Smallville, like they really laid the groundwork in and they had to come in from a TV perspective, not from a comic book perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the first couple of seasons of Smallville are very, I don't want to say grounded because they're not, they're kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But because it's Freak of the Week. And
yeah, you
and
could come into any episode. You didn't have to watch the whole thing.
You could tell that Alan Miles, they took Buffy.
Yeah.
And they put Superman over that template.
Yeah.
Even to the point of giving him sort of his fun teenage sidekicks. And they didn't necessarily find out about him being Superman, or not even Superman, but just having powers until later on. But Chloe was very much a Willow type character. Willows, and they made Pete very much a Xander type character, although not nearly as endearing or funny as Xander, because Pete was kind of obnoxious and annoying, but you could tell that they were following that template, and where it ended up in season 10 is a very far cry from where it started in season one. That show had one heck of an evolution, and there were some bumps along the road, but that show allows comic writers to now come in. That show and Heroes, as bad as Heroes got,
it was still it started in a good place, and
that's debatable.
The first 13 episodes I devoured those, and then I stopped.
Tim Kring managed to sort of not necessarily crack a code, but he managed to put something together in a very similar way to Alan Miles did with Smallville. But you go back, they don't hold up. That's the thing. Is it Smallville? You can go back. You can watch season one, and you have to take it with a grain of salt and go, okay, it was what it was for the time. But it still has charm. It still has heart. Jonathan Kent and Martha Kent are still... They were the same from the beginning of the series to the end of the series.
Yeah, which is great.
But with Heroes, you go back and you're like, oh, they were just trying to hit notes, right? Like, it's very much the difference between a great song and a catchy song. Heroes...
It was a catchy song, but not...
It opened doors, but it also, at the same time, showed exactly what's wrong with doing superhero shows for the sake of doing superhero shows. But that's also a good thing, because it allows the writers of a show like Arrow to see what not to do, right? Which is just as important as seeing from Smallville what works and what's successful.
And they're really, and you're right, right? This idea that it gives, television has now given the space to comic book writers to be like, we know that there's something here, it's gonna work, you're gonna have good people surrounding you, right? Like the whole team of people and directors, and right? So it makes it work, and I just think that's what makes it so gold, is that like all of these little moments in the costume design, in the in the settings, and in the cities, and in the like, it's
well,
just
it
all
doesn't
integrated.
Have to be afraid, right? And I think that's one thing that Heroes always did, is that it was very afraid of being a superhero show.
Right. Yeah,
the
yeah.
fact that there were never any costumes at all. Well, not necessarily at all. There were a couple of like Hero and his buddy.
Yeah.
Kind of got into that area, but they never did it with any sort of sincerity. It was always a joke or ridiculous. Like it was always played off as stupid and silly, which I think is one of the reasons why the audience that they were going for wasn't connected with it. Because when you say that, if you're saying it bold-faced, or whether you're insinuating it, you're insulting your audience, because if you were watching Heroes in season one, you weren't watching it because it was a great dramatic series. You were watching it because it had superheroes in it. Yeah. It was called Heroes. Yeah. There were characters flying around and punching through walls and like using telekinesis. That's why you were watching it. So then in season two, to have them go, yeah, all that stuff that you guys like about superheroes, that stuff's dumb. And it's like, no, that's not what Batman Begins did. Batman Begins came in and it put reverence to that stuff. Yeah. And it took the idea of a costumed superhero and it tried to ground it by saying, you know, like, these are the reasons why a man would do these things. Here's a logic behind it rather than just, they're wearing costumes because it's cool and that's what superheroes have always done, but instead there's a reason why he puts on a costume. There's a reason why he decides to be Batman and not just a vigilante. There's a reason why Green Arrow is Green Arrow. We're seeing that, right? We're getting logic behind it.
Yeah.
The bow has a reason.
Yeah, as opposed to...
And it's not just... it doesn't just ground it, but it also adds depth to it.
Yeah,
so,
and it lets it be whatever.
When you can do that, which is what they're doing with this series, mm-hmm. right off the get-go, like right from episode one, they're building in all of these really cool nods to, mm-hmm. but explanations of the comic book lore.
Yeah.
So that's where having all of these shows that have come before it, and movies and the comic books themselves, which have gotten a lot more serious and more mature, that's where I feel like Arrow has this distinct advantage of being the best one of these genre shows yet. I don't think it's there yet. I think that it's still got a little ways to go before it gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't necessarily off the top of my head tell you what the best genre show of this kind would be.
Yeah,
I would think like
so many.
It's somewhere in the ballpark of Terminator.
Oh, Terminator was so good. Watch Terminator.
Watch
if
Terminator.
You haven't watched. Be prepared to be disappointed with
the end of season two because it gets cut off.
But watch Terminator.
But like Terminator, Fringe. I'm trying to think what else I'm really enjoying right now. Lost even kind of goes.
I'm watching Once Upon a Time and thoroughly enjoying
Once Upon a Time. See, Once Upon a Time is very close to Heroes territory,
though, where they're
trying to tell you not to like what you like about fairy tales, where I feel like they need to embrace it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And if they did that, as well as maybe bringing on a couple of stronger writers, they could really have like solid gold. Like, I really like Once Upon a Time, so I if I'm hard on it, it's only because I
love
care.
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I want to see it.
Yeah,
I want to see it do stuff better. But you know, like I mean, we're critical of Arrow. We watch it with that lens,
right?
Yeah,
we do.
But at the end of the day, if somebody walks up to me and says, "Should I watch Arrow?" I say emphatically, "Yes." Like, watch Arrow.
Oh,
it's a good show.
To talk about each week, the stories are right. We're not talking about, as much as I talk about Stephen Amell's abs, I still talk, right? Like, that's not,
we talk
about the show itself and how
it's
written.
But that's the thing, is that we can talk about it on that level, and we can also talk about it on the level that we usually, like, that we're generally talking about it, which is this deep, like, the subtext of the show and the production quality.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really well-rounded, whereas a show like Once Upon a Time, with a much bigger budget on a much bigger network, isn't managing to do the same things. And I think, like,
okay, I'm la-la-ing right now. I'm in the middle of, like, I'm just, like, intensely...
I'm not going to say anything, like, about the plot or anything, but... Okay.
But genre television, there's a thing out there right now, and Arrow's doing a really good job of fitting in, basically.
I feel like they're at the front of the pack with maybe one or two other shows.
Yeah.
I would say that the only thing out there right now that's going to do better, not do better, but that is a better show than Arrow for me in the genre space, is Fringe. And I say that being like four episodes behind on Fringe and not necessarily being up to date, but that's always how I've been with Fringe because it's Fringe is almost one of those shows where you wait and then you watch
I have to.
Yeah.
I've watched the first episode of this season. So before this season started, I watched the last four seasons in 3 weeks. And I was like, this is the best show ever, oh my gosh. And then I watched the first season and I had to wait.
It's a
and
lot
now
like
I haven't
watched
it. I just really have to marathon it because there's so much happening. Watch Fringe, give it a chance. Give Fringe a chance.
Well, okay.
Like, there's lots.
You don't have to give Fringe a chance anymore. It's done.
No,
it ends with 13 episodes this season.
Yeah.
But that being said, there will be complete series box sets coming out
soon. Yeah, it's enjoyable. Yeah, so you don't have to give it a chance. You can enjoy it.
Allow it to be what it is. Don't try and say that it's the X-Files. Don't try and say that it's Lost. Don't try and say that it's SVU or any of these other procedural shows. Fringe is its own thing. You gotta buckle up. You kind of got to get through the first two seasons. Not that they're bad, but that it doesn't really get ramped up until season three. But when it does ramp up in season three, like, it's ridiculous.
It is.
All the way up until now. But
there's so much good television out there.
There's awesome stuff.
I feel like we tangented, like, totally.
Completely.
It's great because we just get excited by television and good writing. It makes us
love television. But we have a hiatus coming up of a few weeks. So there's an opportunity for people to check out other stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing with TV is that the more TV you watch, the better you become at watching TV. But you have to do it with the right lens, the same way that we do with Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how you get to have a podcast, is that you just watch way too much TV to the point where you have to get it out and express it and share it with other people, and you decide why not record it at the same time and put it on the internet.
So I
don't know, that's just that's our tangent.
Yeah.
We will be back next week ish for our mid-season finale. But you guys are going to have to wait. You're going to have to be patient. As patient as you've been for this episode,
yay,
which we really appreciate, people not being like on Thursday, where's the episode, where's the episode?
So thank you.
But you're going to have to be a little bit extra patient for this one, because we are hopefully, probably 99% sure doing a video episode for you guys for the mid-season finale. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It'll come through on the regular iTunes feed, so if you're subscribing on iTunes, you'll be able to see it there. But you'll also be able to see it. We'll post it on the Facebook page. We will post it on the website. It'll be on YouTube.
Yeah.
So.
And you get to meet us in person.
And if you don't want to watch us do an episode, because I don't know that we'll be that visually interesting, if you don't want to watch it, we will do an audio release of it as well, which will come out probably same day or soon after.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes peeled for that, and I will see you guys next week for the episode Year's End.
Yay, thanks again. Okay. We didn't say to follow us on Twitter.
Oh yeah, we didn't say any of our stuff. That's okay. We can still say it.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. You should email us again. We got so caught up in what we're doing next week that we also want to know.
Because it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. But yeah, thank you for the emails that keep coming in that are highly praised, like positive, and they like us, which is good. Also, remember we said it in the first episode, if you don't like us, let us know.
Yeah.
We want to know.
Tell us.
But we like having conversations with you, so it's mail@quiverpodcast.com.
Yep.
You can follow us on Twitter @quiverpodcast, facebook.com/quiverpodcast. Also, we like to be followed on our own Twitter pages. I'm at @akonkin, @akonkin.
I'm at @arkwulf, @arkwulf.
And keep the conversation going. We're excited. Tell us if you really don't want a video episode, if you are really excited about a video episode.
Yeah.
I'm excited about a video episode. It means I have to, I don't know, put a bit more effort in maybe next week. Instead of just like showing up at Mike's house in my pajamas being like, okay, let's record now.
Yeah, we have to actually care a little bit about how we look.
It's good.
But it'll be good. It'll be good. I'm excited about it. So, like we said, stay tuned.
Because it'll be an epic episode!
Yes.
I have to have something that's like an homage to the epicness of that. Like, maybe, like I don't know, but get like a mini bow and arrow and just have it here. It's going to be like a throwdown episode. I'm so excited.
It's going
to
be.
And then you don't have to wait that much long after Year's End. So it's good. We've got a couple things coming down, and then Year's End, and then there's only like 3 or 4 weeks between, and then it'll be good. But we're excited! Wrapping up, 2012 is almost done.
Well, first half of the season, essentially, is just about coming to a close. So that's it for us this week, though. Yes. So we will catch you guys next week.